Welcome to Psych Minds and Behavior Change with me, your host, Nicole Plumridge. Do you wonder why people behave the way that they do? Does human behavior baffle you? Well, I'm a board-certified behavior analyst and have worked in the Applied Behavior Analysis field, or ABA, for the past 10 years. While my work has mainly been with individuals with learning difficulties, autism, behavioral challenges, the principles of behavior relate to everyone. So if you're interested in cultivating a deeper understanding of human behavior, just keep listening. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Psych Minds and Behavior Change podcast. Before we kind of get into the podcast itself, I just want to say that we are back from our summer vacation. I definitely took a bit of a break from podcasting over the past couple of months. And while I miss everyone back home and miss family, it's still a great feeling to be back at home and back into the routine. I also really missed content creation and kind of writing, interviewing, creating the podcasts themselves. So it does feel good to be back into that. For today's episode, I feel it might be a bit of a controversial topic, I guess, because it is all about saying no to your child. And yeah, we'll be getting more in depth into that, teaching your child the skills to tolerate denied access and hearing the word no. Before we get into this episode, I'd highly recommend you check out the freebies on the resource library over on psychminds.com. All you have to do is head on over to the website, psychminds.com, and click on the resources section, where you will be invited to create an account. Once that account is created, you'll have access to all of the downloads, visuals, workbooks in the library, and I'm also preparing a freebie related to this topic, and it will probably be a visual relating to what is discussed in today's episode. And just as a reminder, it is free to sign up to the resource library, and you automatically have access to all of the downloads. So this is a topic I've been thinking a lot about lately, especially considering the age that my son is at and the stages that he's in. So he's 19 months now and definitely expressing his preferences a lot more. And that involves telling me when he doesn't want something, he doesn't want to go somewhere, or something to that effect. Now, as much as I try to honor his requests, there are inevitably times where I have to say no and cue the meltdowns. Unfortunately, there are things in the environment which I simply can't change. For instance, my son loves to explore and he's such an adventurer and he just likes to see what's around every corner. He's very curious and he does try to walk into the roads where there are lots of cars. And this is obviously something that I have to deny. So as much as I wish I could give him everything he wanted, it's simply not possible. And there are times when as children, as adults, we're inevitably going to be disappointed by life or the outcomes of a situation. So in my opinion, it is an important skill to teach early on how to cope when things don't go your way or when you don't get what you want. Now, I'm not going to go into kind of like what is right, what is wrong. I know there are so many kind of parenting manuals out there, and there's advice from a million different experts. I'm just going to chat about what has worked with me and my son, as well as the types of programs that I've implemented in clinical settings when I was a behavioral supervisor for children with autism and other developmental delays and behavioral challenges. I'll start off on a more personal note, as in how I am teaching my son to tolerate denied access when the situation calls for it. Now, I do want to emphasize that I like to say yes as much as possible and to contrive situations where he is supported by the environment that he's in. But as we all know, things are unpredictable. So one of the latest near-miss tantrum episodes I faced was when we were out in a park and a child walked past my son with juice. Now, my son has recently become obsessed with juice, and this almost set him off. So immediately he started kind of like pointing, requesting, and I wasn't near a store where I could get him juice. But fortunately, I was prepared and had his lunchbox full of alternatives. So that is something that I do a lot of and would recommend. So when something is being denied, always offer alternatives. And it's even better to offer those alternatives with visuals, particularly for kind of like pre-toddler kids, so that you can be sure that they understand what you're saying when you're giving them the choices and it doesn't just kind of aggravate them more because they're not understanding what you're saying. So in this scenario, I immediately pulled out the strawberry pouch smoothie that I had and a Babybel cheese, and I offered him the choice between which one he preferred. So essentially, I was giving him back the control. And although there was no juice, he could choose the alternative options. And this immediately soothed him. He chose the pouch smoothie and was as happy as can be. Another crucial point is that it is important to reward and reinforce this behavior. So my son did not have a meltdown, and he did make a good choice. So once he chose the smoothie, I piled on the praise and the hugs, and I made it specific where I said something along the lines of, oh, that's a great choice, I'm so proud of you, something to that effect. As I say these things, I do want to mention a disclaimer that these solutions or tips do not always work, but they are definitely worth trying when attempting to mitigate a meltdown. Another thing that works well, which I've tried with my son, involves having transition toys or edibles with me at all times. So if we have to leave the playground and go home, for instance, we're moving from something that is highly reinforcing, i.e. the playground, to something less reinforcing, which is home. In order to bridge that transition, I would prepare my son for it verbally by explaining that we have to leave soon, we have one more minute to play, and then when the time is essentially up, I would present him with a novel toy or a toy he hasn't seen in a while and lead him towards the buggy or home. And if he's behaving well, every step of the way, I would be praising him. I also use food. So if I have a snack on me, I'd be offering that for transitioning. So having that handy can be very helpful. Now, a lot of parents that I've worked with in my practice might see that as bribing the child. That's a word I hear a lot. But I see it more as reinforcing the behavior that you want to see, which is a successful transition between playground and home. And there's nothing wrong with adding in additional layers of reinforcement in order to get that behavior to occur. And especially at a young age, children don't understand concepts like rules or time. So if it's dinner time or bedtime, that's why we need to end the fun and go home. That rule doesn't inherently mean anything to them. Also, being socially appropriate doesn't mean anything to them at that age, so they're not shy about throwing themselves on the floor and screaming. You would want to help them with their behavior and teach them what's appropriate through structuring their environment, which is using the transition toy or edibles, until they understand what is essentially rule-governed behavior, where you can learn things and tell them things just based on a general rule, like we have dinner at 7, which means you need to get cleaned up by 6:30 kind of thing. But that all comes later. This 19 months, toddler age, children still don't quite get those sorts of concepts. Now, when it comes to safety, what I do is a little different and perhaps may sound a little bit harsher. So if my son is trying to do something dangerous, like run into the road, which he's done many times, not successfully, obviously, but he tries, I would immediately say no or stop and provide a very brief explanation. Longer explanations, I feel, are totally lost at this age, which again, just as a reminder, he's 19 months, and would probably result in more confusion and aggravation. So I would say something along the lines of, no, that's a road, there are cars. I probably wouldn't even say something like cars are dangerous, because the concept of danger would still not register with him. But he can understand the concept that there are cars, and he can make an association that he should not go places where there are lots of cars. So once I've said no, I would immediately try and distract him. So if there's a toy nearby, I might use that, or I might try and sing a nursery rhyme, just anything to distract him from the situation. If he continues to try and run into the road, I would say no one more time, and then physically remove him from the unsafe situation. And I would like to emphasize that in this scenario, I say no only twice. There's no point saying it over and over, like, no, don't do that, no, come away, no, that's dangerous, no, that's naughty, because this might actually have the opposite effect and would essentially teach the child that they don't have to listen to you the first time you say no. Maybe they listen to you after you've said it 6 times, 7 times, and this can have dangerous repercussions if you're in an unsafe situation. So you do want your child to listen to you the first time you say no, not the 6th or 7th. Having said all that, it is important to manage your own expectations as a parent when teaching this skill to your child, because they're not going to learn it overnight. This is a skill like any other, and it needs practice. Just because you've gone over a couple times doesn't mean that you won't have meltdowns anymore. If you think of learning the times tables, you don't learn them after looking at them just once or twice. When acquiring skills, you need to have patience, continue to practice, and then persevere. Now, that was a bit more on the personal side of things. I would like to talk about how I would teach tolerating denied access to children and adults in the more clinical setting. It's hard enough teaching neurotypical children to accept no, but teaching someone on the spectrum raises a whole new set of challenges, especially pertaining to maladaptive behavior. I've worked with some individuals where it was actually dangerous to say no, because it was such a trigger word that the individual would start engaging in serious harmful behavior, targeting himself, targeting others, so it was a very bad situation to be in. So for individuals where they've built up a learning history with that word and engage in dangerous behavior, one of the simple things I would initially do as part of a behavior intervention plan is substitute the word no for other phrases, like not right now, maybe later, and then teach them an appropriate response to that, such as saying okay or giving a thumbs up. There's also a program I used in my practice called My Way, where the individual simply has to ask for My Way and they get what they want, essentially. Now, you may be thinking that's just giving in to them, giving them whatever they want. And initially, if they emit the appropriate response and ask for My Way, that is exactly what's happening. And again, this program is used for individuals who have a very challenging time accepting no or not getting what they want. So instead of engaging in serious problem behavior, we are replacing that problem behavior with a functional response by getting them to ask appropriately. Once the problem behavior has been replaced successfully with the My Way request and the individual is not emitting the challenging behavior anymore, that's when the denials start to become faded in. And I believe there's a certain structure to how they are faded in. I can't remember specifically, but it's something like initially 33% of requests are denied in the first phase. And either the individual has to go back to work or their academic session, or they're given a less preferred item to engage with during the denial trials. This is all child-led, so if the individual struggles with 33% denial for their requests, then as a therapist you have to backtrack to the earlier phases when the individual is last successful and continue to practice those phases until the child or individual is able to be consistently successful with them. Now, for less extreme behavior, I have used things like timers and visuals to signal when a highly preferred activity is about to end, and essentially they're going to be denied access to it. So let's say, again, it's playground time, and playground time is about to end. It is important to prepare the child, possibly verbally, or with a visual aid that depicts what is happening. For instance, a picture of playground, then a picture of a transition item, and then a picture of a classroom could be the type of visual that you use just so that the individual that you are working with knows what to expect. So this helps prepare them for the upcoming scenario. Once playground time is done and it's the next class's turn for the playground, if the client is about to engage in maladaptive behavior, I would initially prompt them to ask for more time. So once they've either done that independently or with assistance, I would show them a timer and set it to 2 to 3 more minutes. And then once the timer beeps, I would signal that it's time to go and immediately show them their transition toy. If they transition successfully, I would ensure that there's also some form of reinforcement inside the classroom they can access, and this will also be included in their visual schedule. Another important point is that it is not necessarily conducive or helpful to teach the skill of tolerating denied access in the moment of the denial or with highly preferred items initially. So let's say you want to teach your child to tolerate denied access, and you immediately start this and start training it with denying access to the iPad. If the iPad is highly preferred, you are setting yourself up for failure. And you are associating the word no with tantrums and the loss of something that is highly valuable to the child. So it's going to have a lot of negative connotations, and you're just going to build up a lot of this very negative learning history around the word no. In my practice, I tend to contrive situations where I will begin by denying access to less preferred items. So initially, I would do a structured preference assessment, which will help me determine which items or toys are highly preferred, moderately preferred, and then not really cared about. So let's say my client loves the iPad, he likes to color, and he's indifferent to books. I would start contriving situations where I give the child a book to look at for a few seconds to a minute, and then I would say, okay, the book is all done, and take the book away. If the child tolerates that, I would heap on the praise and the reinforcement. Once the child is consistently accepting me saying no to the book, I would either move on to other less preferred items, or depending on the child, move up a level and start denying access to colors. So once they've had 10 minutes coloring, then I would say it's all done and kind of like see how they react. Will they tolerate it? Will they not? And for every time that they are successfully tolerating denied access, it is important to provide a lot of reinforcement. And that reinforcement could be in the form of praise and attention. It could be in the form of tokens. So once they have, say, 5 tokens, they can then exchange it for something that they like. It could be an edible reinforcement, like a cracker, a biscuit. It all depends on what is reinforcing for the individual. Another way of not teaching toleration to denied access in the moment is through the use of social stories. These typically comprise of a short story that depicts the scenario that the child is working on and the adaptive behaviors that the child can engage in versus the inappropriate ones. Now, reading through social stories is great, but to ensure that the individual understands them and is comprehending the material, it's important to ask questions. So, for instance, say, what did the girl do when the dollhouse was taken away? What did she get for sitting at her desk? And once you've tested comprehension in various ways, you can incorporate modeling and role-playing so that the individual contacts the contingency, even if it's in an artificial way. So you might model the correct response yourself while also labeling emotions that go with it. It's important to validate and label the individual's feelings and not just ignore them while trying to teach the skill and drill it into them. So you might say something like, I'm angry that we can't play in the pool right now, but I know it's closed today and we will get to go tomorrow. Also have the child role play with you, and you can turn it into a game and make it kind of fun. It's important to ensure that you are operating at the child's level of understanding while you're doing all this. So the social story could look like an actual story with writing, or it could be entirely picture-based, or a combination of the two. Offering alternatives is also important when denying access. I had a client who I went on outings with, and all he wanted to do was sit with strangers and take their watches. He literally wanted to take their watches off their wrist so he could look at the watch, look at the front, look at the back, and then preferably walk away with it. Now, obviously, this is not socially appropriate, so I made a social story describing how to behave in public, how he cannot go up to people and take their watches, how it might upset them. So instead of going up to strangers for their watches, I scheduled in time during the outings where he could go to a watch shop and look at all the watches there, the front, the back, the wristband, whatever it is he wanted to look at. So while one thing wasn't available, which was other people's watches, something similar in reinforcement value was available to him. And this segues into the next point, where you might want to come up with social stories or visuals for scenarios where it is a no-never situation, or a no-sometimes situation, or a no-not-right-now situation. So in the scenario I just spoke about, it was a no-never situation. You can never walk up to people, take their watch, and leave with their watch. It's simply not allowed. Now, descriptive social stories with pictures along with the watch shop reinforcement worked with this client. But for a client who might have difficulty comprehending this, I might have added colored visuals, where a no-never scenario might be associated with a red car or a red wristband or a red color thing, while a no-not-right-now scenario might be associated with an orange card. So the child learns that when the red card is shown, he knows he cannot access that particular reinforcement ever. Whereas the orange card would teach him that in this specific scenario, he cannot have what he's asking for, but later it might be available for him. So he knows that he can ask for it at some point in the future. For instance, if the pool is closed for maintenance purposes, it would be an orange card scenario. So pairing scenarios with visuals could help to differentiate those scenarios for the child and make it easier for them to understand. To wrap things up, saying no is inevitable. Therefore, it's important to prepare children and teach them how to tolerate and cope when that scenario arises. Life can certainly be disappointing, and we don't always get what we want, unfortunately. By showing children that there are alternatives and it is not the end of the world, this builds up their skill set and gives them more control over their environment. There are situations that happen outside of our control all of the time, but we can control how we react to those scenarios, and we want to teach our children that while one thing may not be available, many other super fun, exciting, and cool things are. It teaches them skills like coping, compromising, negotiating, functional communication, social skills, and it just helps them to navigate their environment more appropriately and more independently. As always, everything said is just general advice. It is by no means prescriptive in any way, so please take what resonates with you and leave what doesn't. I would love to know your thoughts on this episode, and as always, you can always let me know your biggest takeaway message by screenshotting the episode and sharing it over on Instagram, tagging PsychMinds Podcast. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed the episode and found it valuable in some way. Thank you for listening. Thank you for taking the time to listen to this episode. While it can take several hours to create with the scripting, recording, and editing involved, it only takes a minute to rate, review, and subscribe. These things help the podcast out so much, and I'd be so grateful if you could do any one of them. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed the show, and I look forward to connecting with you in an upcoming episode.